Oh, that's right. That Jeff Eller always trying to work a deal here. He thought maybe we could name the parking lot so our parking lot could get paved. It's going to be an interesting hour, I'm sure, because I've got Christy Hall. She is currently serving as the Acting Secretary of Transportation for South Carolina Department of Transportation, formerly known as DOT. How you doing today, Christy?
Doing great, Ann.
It's good to be able to sit down and talk. You are up here from Columbia. Now, Christy, just for the record, how long have you been back as acting director?
Well, it's been a little more than 60 days, actually.
60 days.
A little more than 60.
You getting the mail straight down there, Christy?
Well, you know, I'm privileged to have such a great workforce of about 4,300 employees underneath me and all dedicated professionals.
You really, all of them? Are you sure they're all dedicated?
100%.
100%. All right. Well, there you go, folks. It's going to be an interesting afternoon. She is in her capacity as acting secretary. She's responsible for directing and guiding the agency's planning, financial, legislative, maintenance, and operational efforts for the nation's, and this always blows me away, fourth largest state-owned highway system. Christy, why do we have the fourth largest state-owned highway system?
Well, Ann, there's a lot of history there, and basically it dates back several decades ago when the General Assembly passed a statute that allowed roads to be added to the state highway system.
And so, like the parking lot here at Sharp Facets?
I doubt the parking lot would qualify, but the road behind
the
facility here definitely is on the state system and is one of those small roads that more likely than not was added to the state highway system at the time. Also during the 60s, there was an aggressive program that converted dirt roads from farm to markets. A lot of people still refer to them as farm to market roads. Those were built and paved and brought into the state system as well.
Did they really think this through when they did all this, Christy?
Well, I think at the time it was more likely an economic development incentive type program to try to continue the growth of the state's economy at that point in time.
Yeah. So today we have all these roads, and all during last year's legislative session, there was a big push to do something about the roads. And Christy, as you have to look over all the road systems here in South Carolina, I understand our bridges are in not good shape. We all know that there's many roads that we go on that are in bad shape. What is the, what was it, a year or so ago they added from the, what bank was it, the Intra, did I say it wrong, the Interstate Bank, the 500?
Yes. Let me back up just a little bit. Again, you did mention we have the fourth largest state-maintained highway system in the nation. And it is, if I were to do an overall assessment on it, I would say the pavements themselves on the entire system, if you were to look at it in a whole, are in poor condition. As a matter of fact, about 46% or close to 50% of what we describe as lane miles is in poor condition. 38% of those are in fair condition, and only 16% of the lanes in the state system are in good condition. So the bulk of the system is in poor condition. When you look at where the traffic is flowing, interstates versus routes like the bypass out here in front of you or the little small neighborhood street behind you out here, it's a similar picture, although I would add that we've done a better job of maintaining the interstate system compared to the smaller neighborhood streets or roads like the bypass, major U.S. or SC routes.
Federal road, does that come under federal money for the interstates?
South Carolina is heavily dependent on the federal program and federal aid for routes like the interstate, routes like U.S. 1 and SC-72, the bypass out here in front of your station, would qualify for federal funds. But the problem is that there's just not enough of those resources to meet the needs of the system. And the state resources that are available We have some items basically right off the top of those that gets dedicated to certain activities, and then we match the federal program so that we can take $1 of state money and basically match it with $4 to $5 of federal money and create a much bigger project or do a lot more with those dollars. And then we basically have what's left over for the neighborhood streets. The bridges that you talked about, actually we're in fairly good shape on our bridges in this state. We have a little more than 8,400 bridges in the state, mm-hmm. and about 10% of that total are what we call structurally deficient. That doesn't mean they're about to fall down or collapse or anything like that, so don't worry about that. But it does mean that we have to watch them, and you know, if they ever do get to a point where we have concerns over safety, we will close those structures and create a detour. And we only have about, usually it ranges at about 10 bridges in the state, statewide, that are closed due to concerns about collapse or failure.
So do we have 10 bridges that are closed at this time?
Yes, we have right at 10.
Hmm. And what is the, will they be being fixed?
Some bridges would, if it's in an area that carries a lot of traffic, maybe a long detour, a route to a school, something that is significant enough to justify the major expense of replacement, because bridge projects can be very expensive. They can range anywhere from $250,000 up to $2 to $3 to $4 million a structure. It just depends on the type and the location. So some of the bridges in our inventory may be small little wooden bridges, maybe out in the middle of a national forest or something like that. If that one, we were to close those, more likely than not, we probably would defer replacing that type of structure. But if it were, say, in a major neighborhood or carried a lot of traffic, we would put something in place to do an expedited replacement.
Now, the longer we wait, though, to really work on the road system, not the bridges, but on the road system, the more it's going to cost, if I'm correct on that, as the road beats down into the bed of the road or whatever, it could be very expensive.
Absolutely. It's very similar to maintaining a house. So the concept of deferred maintenance applies to infrastructure just as much as it does to a car or to a house. So if your roof starts to leak, if you don't replace that roof, then you have to build, when you go in to make the repairs, more often than not, you have major structural repairs that have to happen to a house. Same concept applies with the roads. If it degrades to a point to where the substructure is not strong enough to carry the load of the traffic on it, then you start to develop potholes and just a lot of failure of the roadway. So we've looked at some numbers, and basically if you intercept the decay curve of a road, in other words, if you catch it early enough, mm-hmm. then you can save us, it basically costs 10 times more if you don't intercept it early versus if you let it degrade all the way to the point of a full reconstruction.
Now, based on the condition of the roads as this date right here, what are we looking at to be able to, I think I read something about over the next decade or something, $42 billion is the cost that it could cost. And is this as the roads continue to decay, or is this saying that we become aggressive on this and start really doing a lot of work now?
Well, the needs number is basically what you're referring to, and that's a 29-year horizon where we looked out over the next 29 years and said, what are the needs of the state's infrastructure, whether it's pavements, bridges. We can't forget congestion, because it's just as important to deal with congestion at intersections and roadways, safety, and our day-to-day maintenance activities, mowing, pothole patching, sign replacement. All those parts comprise the infrastructure of the state. So we did the study, and the study has basically produced a number that says that we need roughly about $1.5 billion additional resources a year, each year, for the next 29 years to get the state's system up to a condition of good repair. So our current budget tends to hover at about that same number of about $1.5 billion a year. So in essence, what we're saying is to get to a state of good condition for our roads and bridges, mass transit, day-to-day maintenance, our budget essentially needs to double to get to that state. Now, when you look at pavements, which is the question that you asked, if you look at that on its own, that will comprise the bulk of the number. And we did a scenario and looked at and said, what do we need on our pavements for the next 20 years? If we wanted everything in this state as far as road pavements to be in a state of good, fair, or better condition, interstates, U.S. routes, neighborhood streets, everything that's on the state system, we estimated that it would take a little more than $700 million additional each year on top of what we're already investing just to reach that state of good repair.
Well, this, folks, is a problem because we're not putting those dollars to this, are we, Christy?
Well, we're stretching our limited resources as far as we can, Ann.
Spoken like a politician here today, Christy. But seriously, we saw last year in the House, in the legislative session, in the House passed a budget. I know Governor Haley wanted to, if you raised a gas tax, she wanted to lower the tax structure. I don't think we actually made many decisions. We had some extra money that came up out of the budget. I guess we had a little bit better year than what they thought for money coming in. But we're not making the hard decisions, are we? Our politicians aren't making those hard decisions to fund it. In fact, if I remember correctly, at the end of last year, there was a real, I'll use the word fight, shall we say, in the Senate about whether to raise the gas tax or not.
Well, from the policy standpoint, there certainly was a lot of dialogue with regards to what to do and what the priorities should be. The agency definitely appreciates all the dialogue when it comes to infrastructure, and we recognize the outcry from the public about the condition of the roadways, as well as the General Assembly, I believe, hears those same outcries. The real issue and the real challenge is, what are the priorities? And, the agency, we're focused on a preservation first type deployment of funds, and the governor as well, when she presented last year in her executive budget, a preservation first type strategy to look at a way to start the investment level. I mean, certainly the number that I referenced as the overall needs number is a very large number. We recognize that. We know that it would take a substantial increase in investment to reach that number. And so last year, as part of the executive budget, the governor submitted something to basically start the dialogue and say, what can we do with $400 million? And that's a good start. It's certainly not the complete answer to the situation. There's still other needs, but it needs to start at a certain level and most likely ramp up from there. And so that's why we ran several scenarios to look at what are the needs on pavements, what are the needs on bridges, what are the needs for safety, and what are the needs for capacity or congestion projects.
And, I think that's been another part of the equation is when Greenwood is sitting here and we seem to see a lot of the dollars go down there on the coast. And that always seems to be where the dollars go. In fact, what were you just telling me, because of the flooding, they've been down there taking care of some of the roads down there in Charleston?
Well, of course, we have a duty to respond during emergency situations. Sure. When there's road closures. Same thing happened up in this area of the state when we had the ice storm last year. So we have a duty to respond and to get the roadways passable. You know, I hear all the time the comments about this area of the state getting more than another area, and I don't know that I personally have really run any numbers to say yes they do or no they don't, but I can tell you one thing, and that is that the communities that have stepped up and basically self-imposed a tax on themselves to fund infrastructure, it certainly is beneficial for them from the condition of the roads standpoint, as well as addressing congestion. The Low Country in particular, well, actually the entire coastal area, from Myrtle Beach all the way down to the Beaufort area, have self-imposed taxes on themselves to fund roadway projects, whether it's paving projects, intersection projects, widening projects, or whatnot. And so there certainly is a lot more roadway activity in those neck of the woods when you look at dollars spent on the system. But that's not all DOT dollars. So I can't speak for those local programs and their priorities and whatnot. But if you look around at the fast-growing areas, like the coastal communities, like the Charlotte area where they Rock Hill, Fort Mill area, they as well have self-imposed.
How about Greenville, though? Didn't Greenville fight that or something? Do I remember correctly?
That's correct. I believe they've tried a couple of times and have not been successful in implementing something.
And so that's why there's so much congestion right there on Haywood Road. Is that what you're going to say next?
Well, I don't know that I would tie those two directly together.
But they certainly do have a lot of when you talk about congestion. So let's hear a quick word from our sponsors. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Christy Hall. She is the Acting Secretary of Transportation for DOT. It's going to be interesting. We're going to get into some good issues. Hey, if you've got a question, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We'll be right back.
Gold. Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery. We are talking with Christy Hall. She's the acting secretary of the DOT right here with us across from me at the table. And, you know, one of the things that was in the Index Journal the other day, Christy, was a comment from Dixie Wiles Stooks, I think. And she said, recently the All the Way was added to the stop sign at the intersection of Laurel Road and Haltwanger Road. There are four areas of traffic coming up to those stop signs, all not knowing who should move first. And then she discusses how many seven subdivisions, the apartment complexes, Ashley House. I mean, there is a lot going on right there at that intersection. And she really wants to know, when is it time that we who live in these areas are going to feel safe to drive on these roads with that much traffic? We need to consider this for possible traffic lights to be erected to help relieve the feeling that an accident is prone to happen when traveling on these roads. So what's the answer to that, Christy?
Great question by a reader in the writer to the local paper here. And I actually drove through that intersection on my way.
Were you scared?
Well, no, because I actually, you know, I'm familiar with four-way stops, which is essentially what that is, although it was not a typical cross-style intersection. I think that may be causing some of the confusion. But, you know, obviously you just navigate it through just the way that, you know, your driver's manual taught you to, and that is, you know, if you get there first, then the first person goes, and then you alternate based on the typically going to the right. But traffic control devices, as those in the engineering world refer to them, there's different levels of them, and so in an ideal world, most traffic engineers prefer not to have any kind of, they like to have free flow conditions, in other words, no stop and go, but obviously safety plays a role into it, as well as making sure that the intersection's functioning properly. So typically, whenever the traffic that's flowing through the intersection gets at a certain level, or if there's any safety concerns, then either a three-way or all-way or four-way stop is usually tried first to see if that can remedy the situation that the traffic engineer is trying to address. So that's kind of what I would call the first step in traffic control management. The ultimate solution is most frequently a traffic signal, but more often than not, the desire is to try to implement something just like what has been done there at Haltwanger and Laurel, which is a four-way stop type device. And then our traffic engineers will continue to study it, and if it meets the warrants for a traffic signal, which are about 7 warrants that are required to be met, then a signal would be installed.
Does it have to do with the number of accidents that happen?
Accidents do play a role in it, but traffic volumes play a component. The geometry of the intersection would come into play as well. That area of Greenwood is growing very, very quickly. I agree with the reader. Haltwanger has always been a very busy street. The apartments that are building there that constructed the new entrance that created the fourth leg of that intersection, they're growing very quickly and obviously have a lot of traffic going in and out. When I drove through it, it appeared to be a lot of young people coming in and out of that new apartment complex. So the geometry is going to make a difference. There are no turn lanes
right.
at that intersection. And so you really need the turn lanes to be there before a signal is erected, primarily because if you have one car that's wanting to turn left, then they block up the whole intersection for some people that are wanting to go straight through. So there's a lot of pieces of the puzzle that have to get put into place before a signal is installed. It's typically not the first thing that's done right away for a situation like this. But great question, and I'm confident that our engineers here in the Greenwood area are studying it very closely.
Well, you know, that brings up another question, because one of the things that, yes, we're going to talk right through the news because I got a lot to cover here today. One of the things that I think is rather hard, and I had, I remember back in February, we had Jerry Timmons on, who works for Davis and Floyd, and they were talking about how difficult it is to get all the permitting and getting everything so that a project can move forward even once the project is identified. So even after this project, let's say that eventually they decide it needs lights or it needs another lane or this type of thing, we're talking a long time.
Well, certainly we call it the project development process.
The process.
Okay. And it is a process. It takes a long time. It's not unheard of for a project to take anywhere from 2 years for a basic project that maybe requires some design permitting, right-of-way acquisition, so you're buying property from individuals in order to get ready to build a project, to as much as it's not unheard of to have a project that takes 7 years if it's a mega project, lots of right-of-way to buy, big permits that have to be secured, a lot of design work, a lot of utility coordination. So, there's just a whole host of activities that have to happen before construction can start on big projects. Now, a repaving job, sidewalk projects, things like that, those are fairly quick turnarounds. The resurfacing projects, typically we can churn those out within just a few months of saying we want a project for this road. It only takes just a few months to get that out to contract and get it underway. But the big projects like the interstate jobs, mm-hmm. The construction of Calhoun Bypass
right.
here in town several years ago, those are much bigger projects that would take a lot longer to develop.
Now, just out of curiosity, when the new Walmart went in up here, they got a new stoplight in there.
They did.
Yes. How did that happen? So relatively quickly, because they built that project in, less than a year, I know. But how come they were able to get a light in that project? Because it wasn't even there, and now we have a light there.
Great question. I love that you tied the two together. Walmart and large developments, just like Walmart, when they come into an area and develop, they approach DOT throughout their development process. And one of the items that they work with us on is their access points to the highway, state highway. And we, on a development like Walmart, we will require them to do what's called a traffic study. And that traffic study will basically help define whether or not they need turn lanes into the Walmart, just like this new one has down the street from here. It will also help determine whether or not a traffic light would be needed to support the flow in and out of the development to make sure that things are safe. And so they would take on that engineering work and that study, submit it to our local engineers here in the Greenwood area, and they would review it and make an assessment of whether or not it was appropriate and they agreed with it or not. Because, you know, DOT, our main mission when it comes to roadways is the movement of traffic. And so for every traffic light that you install, the more congestion you tend to build up along the roadway. We take the installation of traffic lights very, very seriously and look at them and make sure that they are indeed warranted and that the benefits are going to exceed the introduction of delay that it's going to cause to the motorists traveling on the roadway. So there's a balancing act there. But typically, a major development like that developer themselves are going to do the reviews and more likely than not do the design and pay for it.
So did Walmart pay for the light?
To be honest with you, I don't know for that particular situation whether they did or did not, but if I were to guess, I would say more likely they did, unless the local transportation committee here agreed to assist in it. So.
Okay. All right. Well, we are here with Christy Hall. Do you have a question for her? You know, she lives in this area, so she does know this area. I've known Christy for many years, and I must say, Christy, you certainly have worked in a lot of different positions at the DOT. You really have worked it almost from the bottom up, not quite, but almost from the bottom up. You started out, what, as a designer?
I did. I have earned the reputation and the nickname of Checkers.
Checkers?
Checkers in the DOT, internal nickname. But yes, I started out right out of school drawing plans for road projects. And over my career, I've been blessed to be able to move from the design world into the construction world, where I was out on the road projects getting my boots dirty and working with contractors on building road and bridge projects, as well as I had the wonderful opportunity to serve the Greenwood area as the head engineer for this region for a while. And that's wonderful. This is just a wonderful area, very close to my heart. Obviously, I'm from this area. My family's in this area. And just really had the great opportunity to learn a lot about traffic engineering as traffic signals and why this one and not that one. And also had the opportunity to work with our maintenance forces that are out there patching potholes and putting up new signs and mowing and whatnot. So I've been very, very blessed on the engineering side. And then in 2011, you may recall, DOT had a little bit of a financial issue, and I was brought back to Columbia to head up our finance area, and I did that up until about a little more than a year and a half ago when I switched back over to engineering, and then I was asked to step up to serve as the acting secretary. So DOT has been very good to me. I've been very blessed, and just appreciate all the opportunities.
Absolutely, and of course, you did go to Clemson.
I am a Clemson grad.
Yes, that's right, and you'll be able to hear Clemson right here on WCRS on Saturday, folks. That's right, your official Clemson station right here in the Greenwood area. Hey, let's hear a quick word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here. Sharp Facets Gallery. Yes, I'm talking with Christy Hall. She's the acting secretary of DOT, Department of Transportation. You know, do you sleep well at night?
I do, actually.
Okay, I was just checking. Because this is a huge road system. And I know one of the things that was started right there, literally almost at the end of session, was they wanted to start doing a review of the Department of Transportation. The Senate, I believe, was the one that implemented that. How have you been able to affect, through your working in all these different offices and parts, how are you able to affect, and how is that audit actually coming along for the Department of Transportation?
All right, yes. Certainly during last legislative session, there was a lot of dialogue about funding, and some questions arose with regards to is the agency spending the resourcing that it has appropriately? And those are certainly fair questions. And out of that spun really a couple of efforts on the legislative front. One was the newly formed House Oversight Committee, elected to select DOT as one of the first state agencies that it did a review on. So for the last several months, we've been providing information and attending hearings and testifying to the committee to provide them information on DOT or operations, the state of the system, any sort of particulars that they're interested in. For example, they asked a lot of questions about the county transportation committees at a recent hearing. So that's still ongoing. They are in the process of finishing what they call a staff report, which is taking all the information that we've submitted and compiling it into a document that can basically be a starting point for additional reviews. So that's still ongoing. We're expecting that to last well into next legislative session beginning in January. In addition to that, the Senate asked that the Legislative Audit Committee come in and do a review of DOT, and they are initiating that. Been working very hard. They recently added two more auditors to their team to come in and help review the information. Obviously, DOT, with the responsibility that we have, we're one of the largest state agencies in South Carolina. Large workforce, big budget, a lot going on. And it's very complex the way our funding works, especially with the federal program. So they're bringing some additional staff on to help as well. So we're expecting that to continue well into the first part of the year, and then we'll just adjust from there going forward. In addition to all those, we have a handful of other regular audits that happen each year. We have an annual financial audit. We're initiating that as well with an outside consultant that comes in annually to review our financials and issue annual financial statements for us. So we've got a lot going on, and so we've just been doing the best we can to keep our day-to-day activities moving forward and advancing the agency and being responsive to all these inquiries.
What have you been able to influence as far as things that are happening that you feel are going to make some changes to the agency?
Yes, over the last couple of months, my leadership team and I, we've been working very hard to try to address some of the issues that we feel like are key to moving the agency forward. In other words, we're not going to wait another 6 to 8 months to address anything. So we, a year or so ago, implemented a new strategic plan that helps us and guides us day-to-day in our efforts. But even beyond the strategic plan that we're going to keep pushing forward on, there are four key areas that we identified that we want to work on immediately and make some good progress on over the next several months. And if you don't mind, I'll be more than happy to share them with you. The first of which is just stabilizing the agency. whether it's the leadership.
Are they in free fall?
Well, there was a point in time when I looked around and I was the only deputy standing.
Okay.
And so, we've done a lot over the last 60 days to get the leadership team reestablished and working together. And it's not just stabilizing at the top, but it's that frontline maintenance employee that's out on the road every day that we're concerned about. We have tremendous turnover on that front, and it desperately affects the way that we're able to deliver the services that we need to and be responsive to customer requests, whether it's patching a pothole or clearing some limbs that are blocking a sign. All that matters at the end of the day. We want to be responsive. So we've implemented some things to try to address the turnover.
Going to pay them more?
We did a staff study, a salary study, and we did raise that minimum level for that frontline maintenance employee. We realized through that staff study or through the salary study that we were paying actually below the poverty line for those maintenance employees, so it was really hard for us to recruit. So we did raise it, not a lot, not a tremendous amount of money, but we're trying to be competitive with the county governments on those maintenance employees, those frontline trades workers. So we did that. That's kind of the first thing that we're focused on. The second item is project delivery, whether it's the development phase that you referenced earlier, that sometimes can take longer than we really want it to, or whether it's once the project goes to contract, how long does it take to get it built? So we're putting some metrics in place and basically looking at ourselves and diving into the data to see where the delays are and to see what we can do to improve that. So we're committed to improving the delivery of our projects to the motoring public. So we're working on that very hard as well. The third area that we struggle with and want to make some changes on is basically visibility into what the agency's doing and simplifying our message. Our budget is very complex, and it's...
I hear the phone lines ringing, Christy. Go ahead.
it's very complex, and it's hard to understand. And so a lot of the criticism that was held over the last several months was difficulty in understanding DOT, how we're resourced, and what we do with those resources. So we're working on some things to try to simplify it, to make it less complex, more easy to understand. And if you want that additional level of detail, we'll have that available where you can drill down and get to it. But just kind of stepping back and taking our budget, instead of having two pie charts that had, you know, a dozen or so slices of each, we're looking at a pie chart that has less than six pieces to it. And basically saying, we're going to tell you that when we spend our dollars, it's either on maintenance and system preservation, the bulk of it. The next piece would be what we call capacity and operational, in other words, the widening projects, the safety projects, the congestion projects, the signalization projects.
The signalization projects.
Traffic signals.
Okay,
your favorite topic.
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
The next would be debt, because we do have some projects that we're still paying back project loans on. Engineering and project management would be another piece. General administration, like folks like myself, our HR department, our IT department, mm-hmm. all the support services, and then kind of what's left over, which would be part of the mass transit that we assist with and some other miscellaneous activities. So really just trying to condense it way down to just a few core areas to explain what we're doing. And then finally, the fourth item of opportunity that we're working hard on is the acquisition of the consultants. We call it procurement of professional services, but basically looking at how we're doing that, and we are very much aware of the perception that contracts awarded to people that either formerly worked with the agency or have some connection to it. So we're implementing...
Well, there were some improprieties there.
Well, I'm not aware of any on the professional services side.
Okay.
I feel like our process is a good process. There certainly are some improvements we can make to try to make sure that there's no inappropriate influence in the selection of contracts. So we're doing that. One of the initiatives that I implemented within the last 30 days was a post-employment restriction, which basically takes the state's ethics law that mandates how DOT employees, what they can and can't do after they leave the agency. We took that and basically strengthened it and said, if you leave DOT and you're working on a contract or trying to secure a contract with the agency, you or your firm is, you cannot be included in that for at least a year after you leave. In other words, we're just trying to draw that clear line in the sand and say we're not going to sit here and analyze whether you were substantially involved or not substantially involved in the project. We don't even want the appearance of any undue influence or conflict, so we're going to implement this one-year rule for the DOT. So those are the four big ones. We're still working on implementing some of the pieces and parts of these, and I'm very proud of my team and the advancements that we've made to date.
Well, that sounds good. Now, this we got some money that was supposed to be coming back here to the different counties that was for doing what, county roads? This was an issue I wanted to discuss because we all have questions how they decide which roads actually need to get done. And there was money in the budget that was sent to the county, I guess sent to the counties for this. Am I correct on this?
Yes, it was sent to what's called the County Transportation Committees. We refer to them as the CTCs.
Mm-hmm.
And in Greenwood, for example, Greenwood CTC normally receives about $1 million a year, okay, plus or minus a little bit. And with the additional dollars that are that were set aside in last year's budget, we're anticipating that the Greenwood CTC will get about $4.3 million
wow,
at the end of the day. Now, that's a lot of money, and but when you look at what you can do with $4 million, it really doesn't go as far as we certainly would like for it to. And it's my understanding, based from my staff here in the Greenwood area, that the CTC met, and there are 4 to 5 projects that they've identified for using those dollars on. And it's, if all 5 projects move forward, it will only cover about 10 miles of road. So 4.3
miles of road?
Yes, only 10 miles.
With $4.3 million?
Yes. Now, part of that...
We might as well give up the ship. I think we all ought to go out and get our own little paving company and just pave right in front of our places from now on, folks. Go ahead, Christy. I'm sorry.
Well, part of the issue with it, Ann, is exactly the issue that you asked earlier, and that's the deferred maintenance. 2 of these roads are going to require full reconstruction, and that's consuming at least half of the dollars that are available. So a little more than $2 million will go just to 2 roads.
What 2 roads are they?
Well, it looks like it's going to be Flatwood Road and maybe Scotch Cross Road, those 2 roads here in Greenwood County, just because they have to be full reconstructed. The other 3 roads, if they move forward, will take basically like an intermediate type repair where we go in and make patches where needed and then resurface it. But 2 of them are going to take complete reconstruction.
Wow. 10 miles.
Correct.
I don't know what. How are we going to get these road systems? We got the 4th largest in the state, in all the United States, and we're going to do 10 miles for $4.3 million, and that's the direction we have for Greenwood here. That was supposed to be that is a good chunk added to what we were supposed to get.
Yes, certainly. I mean, when you look at it statewide, the General Assembly set aside an additional $216 million for these neighborhood-type streets, smaller roadways during the last session. And by the time you carve it up and send it out to all the little CTCs in the state, Greenwood, you know, ended up with $4 million at the end of the day. Now, that includes their normal $1 million plus about $3 million and some change in the new money.
Now, how does this get decided, though, Christy, just out of curiosity? How do they decide what projects, and does it have to be approved by the DOT if they make a project decision?
Well, the CTCs are not required to follow the same type of ranking and requirements that DOT does with regards to project selection. However, some CTCs do have criteria that they've established themselves to help them in the selection process. All of the CTCs this year, we submitted to them a list of potential candidates of roads that would meet the intent of the law, which are secondary roads, these little small roads in the state. We sent them a list of all candidates, whether it was for their county, whether it was complete reconstruction or just minor repair or some sort of intermediate repair. We sent the entire list to them. And CTCs, like the Greenwood CTC, are asking for the input from our local engineers here in the Greenwood area for recommendations on which roads to select. And our team is gracious enough to supply a recommendation to them, and the Greenwood CTC has accepted that recommendation. So it's a collaborative effort in communities like Greenwood, but you know, the needs are just tremendous. I go back to what I had said earlier, and that was, you know, the bulk of our system, close to half of the system, is in poor condition. And when it gets to that poor condition, that's when you have to do the full reconstruction. So that's where your costs just escalate. So the system has decayed to a point to where it's going to take a lot of money to get it back to a state of good repair. And again, that's what's driving that needs number that says that to get everything up to a state of good repair, the budget would have to be doubled if that were the desire to get there.
Well, you know, part of the question is, you know, there was the big discussion about the gas, raising the gas tax. I know Governor Haley had to have it revenue neutral, but Christy, just in your opinion, just looking at the whole state and looking at the budget, is increasing the gas tax a viable way to go? Would you be able to do all that needs to be done to the roads if the gas tax was raised, and how much would it have to be raised in order to generate those dollars?
Yeah, I mean, the agency, we're not going to take a position on what the right
where
mix.
The money comes from.
Well, that's really a policy decision that the General Assembly has to wrestle with, and you know, it's the needs are tremendous, obviously. And we know that the quadrupling of the gas tax to meet the needs number that's been out and about in the media is a difficult proposition, without a doubt. So we don't know what the correct answer is. We are very heavily dependent on state motor fuel gas taxes in this state.
Sure.
And at the federal level. So there's a lot of different models that other states have looked at. The General Assembly in 2013 did go down the path of increasing some revenues to the agency.
You're listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. Sorry, go ahead.
Nope, that's good. So the General Assembly did move some general funds to help with roads, as well as move some other fees over to the agency to and to the State Infrastructure Bank to help address some of the infrastructure. So it's probably going to have to be a blended approach, but what the right blend is, that's a policy decision that the General Assembly is going to have to address.
You've gotten real good at this, Christy. Hey, I'm Ann Eller, Christy Hall. Always a pleasure to have you come sit down with us. You're right, there are a lot of different approaches, and you're right, it probably is going to have to be a blended approach. But the big thing is, if we don't go ahead and do something and start making those decisions now, I really hate the fact that they weren't able to come up with this. Of course, next year is an election year, so are people going to stand back and not do things that maybe they should have if they weren't really, really worried about being reelected? I don't know, folks, but, you know, little birds have told me that could happen. So we've got to keep the pressure on our congressional people to do what's necessary to get the roads in good shape. It's great that Governor Haley goes out and her team goes out and puts together all these great businesses coming here. But if we don't have the infrastructure, the roads, et cetera, bridges to keep our roads moving, it's going to be tough on these businesses that are looking at coming here. So we've got to make some decisions. Christy Hall, thanks so much for coming to see us today.
Thank you, Ann. I've enjoyed it.
All right. That's going to do it for us. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. We'll be back in the morning. Don't you go away.